Welcome to Zichru Daf Simanim. I'm Rabbi Avram Goldar, and today we're in Masechet Shabbos, Daf Yud Tes. So the 3 points we're going to focus on. Number one, it was taught in the Brisa that one may not embark on a ship less than 3 days before Shabbos, unless it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. The Rif explains that the rabbis prohibited such travel since a person typically feels seasick the first 3 days of travel, and this would diminish one's ability to enjoy Shabbos. In the case of traveling for the purposes of a mitzvah, though, the principle of Ha'osuk B'mitzvah Patamina Mitzvah applies. This means the one who's preoccupied with a mitzvah is free from performing another mitzvah that would interfere with the first. Hence, traveling to do a mitzvah would be permitted, even though it will prevent him from performing the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. Point number two, Rabbi Tzadok said it was the custom from Gamliel's household to give white clothes to the launderer 3 days before Shabbos, but they would give colored clothes even on Erev Shabbos. White clothing is hard to clean, and therefore it takes more time for the cleaning to be complete before Shabbos begins, whereas colored clothing can be fully cleaned before Shabbos begins, even when given to a launderer on Erev Shabbos. So being the white clothes are hard to launder, the price to do so is higher. Abai used this insight to challenge a launderer who wanted to charge him the same amount for colored clothes as he was charging for laundering white clothes. And point number three, the final mission in the Perek prohibits roasting meat, onions, or eggs on Erev Shabbos unless there's enough time for them to become roasted before Shabbos. Similarly, one may not place bread in the oven or a biscuit upon coals close to nightfall on Shabbos unless there's enough time for it to crust while it's still day. The concern in all these cases is that if they're not sufficiently roasted or baked by the time Shabbos begins, one may come to stir the coals on Shabbos. So once again, the 3 points are, it was taught in a Braisa that one may not embark on a ship less than 3 days before Shabbos unless it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. The Rif explains that the rabbis prohibit us to travel since a person typically feels seasick the first 3 days of travel, and that would diminish his ability to enjoy Shabbos. In the case of traveling to the purpose of the mitzvah, the principle of Ha'osuk B'mitzvah Patamina Mitzvah applies, meaning the one who's preoccupied with a mitzvah is free from performing another mitzvah that would interfere with the first. Hence, traveling to do a mitzvah would be permitted, even though it will prevent him from performing the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. Point number two, Rabbi Tzadok said it was the custom of Gamliel's household to give white clothes to the launderer 3 days before Shabbos, but they would give colored clothes even on Erev Shabbos. White clothing is hard to clean, and therefore it takes more time for the cleaning to be complete before Shabbos begins, whereas colored clothing can be fully cleaned before Shabbos begins, even when given to a launderer on Erev Shabbos. Being that white clothes are hard to launder, the price to do so is higher, and Abai used this insight to challenge a launderer who wanted to charge him the same amount for colored clothes as he was charging for laundering white clothes. And the third point is, the final mission of the Perek prohibits roasting meat, onions, or eggs on Erev Shabbos unless there's enough time for them to become roasted before Shabbos. Similarly, one may not place bread in the oven or a biscuit upon coals close to the nightfall of Shabbos unless there's enough time for it to crust while it's still day. The concern in all these cases is that if they're not sufficiently roasted or baked by the time Shabbos begins, one may come to stir the coals on Shabbos. All right, so now let's go to our siman. So the siman for Yud Tes is a yacht. Yud Tes, yacht. So here we go. The yacht always sets sail on Tuesdays, giving seasick passengers enough time to get their soiled white clothes clean for Shabbos at a high price, and feel good enough to prepare a roast before nightfall. Once again in slow motion. The yacht, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Tes. The yacht always sets sail on Tuesdays, giving seasick passengers, which reminds us, it was taught in the Braisa that one may not embark on a ship less than 3 days before Shabbos, unless it's for the purpose of a mitzvah. The Rif explains that the rabbis prohibited such travel since a person typically feels seasick the first 3 days of travel, and this would diminish one's ability to enjoy Shabbos. In the case of traveling for the purposes of a mitzvah, the principle of Ha'osuk B'mitzvah Patamina Mitzvah applies. This means the one who is preoccupied with a mitzvah is free from performing another mitzvah that would interfere with the first. Hence, traveling to do a mitzvah would be permitted, even though it will prevent him from performing the mitzvah of enjoying Shabbos. So the yacht always sets sail on Tuesdays, giving seasick passengers enough time to get their soiled white clothes cleaned for Shabbos at a high price. Which reminds us, Rabbi Tzadok said, it was the custom of Gamliel's household to give white clothes to the launderer 3 days before Shabbos, but they would give covered clothes even on Erev Shabbos. White clothing is harder to clean, and therefore it takes more time for the cleaning to be complete before Shabbos begins, whereas colored clothing can be fully cleaned before Shabbos begins, even when given to a launderer on Erev Shabbos. So being the white clothes are hard to launder, the price to do so is higher. Abai used this insight to challenge a launderer who wanted to charge him the same amount for colored clothes as he was charging for laundering white clothes. So once again, the yacht always sets sail on Tuesdays, giving seasick passengers enough time to get their soiled white clothes clean for Shabbos at a high price, and feel good enough to prepare a roast before nightfall. Which reminds us, the final mission in the Perek prohibits roasting meat, onions, or eggs on Erev Shabbos unless there's enough time for them to become roasted before Shabbos. Similarly, one may not place bread in the oven or a biscuit upon coals close to nightfall of Shabbos unless there's enough time for it to crust while it's still day. The concern in all these cases is that if they're not sufficiently roasted or baked by the time Shabbos begins, one may come to stir the coals on Shabbos. So once again, the yacht always sets sail on Tuesdays, giving seasick passengers enough time to get their soiled white clothes clean for Shabbos at a high price and feel good enough to prepare a roast before nightfall. So now it's time for our four blah back chazorah. Dav Tesvav. So the symbol for Dav Tesvav is a fruit bowl, because Tesvav 2, Tu B'Shvat, and we're using a fruit bowl. So here we go. The fruit bowl reminding us we're on Dav Tesvav. The fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together, which reminds us the Rav Huna state that Hillel and Shammai only argued in three cases. What's the minimum amount of flour required that the dough would be subject to the separation of challah? What's the minimum amount of drawn water, Maim Sheuvim, that will disqualify a mikvah? And if a woman becomes a Nida, is retroactively declared Tameh from the time of her last examination. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from Chutz La'aretz into the glass bowl. So that reminds us, one of the decrees of the early Tanaim was that the land outside of Eretz Yisrael was to be considered Tameh. There were Gazur Tumal Eretz Ha'amim. The Gemara clarifies the background of this decree. Yossi ben Yoezer Yisrael and Yossi ben Yochanan Yishu Yerushalayim decreed that the land outside Eretz Yisrael was considered Tameh. Their concern was that since the idolaters did not mark their graves, any place in their lands was suspect of containing a grave, and unmarked graves were also more likely to be plowed over, resulting in scattered bone fragments. Therefore, if Truma came in contact with its dirt, the Truma would not be allowed to be eaten. However, the Truma was not allowed to be burned either. In the words of the Gemara, the Truma is suspended. The Rabban of 80 years before the destruction of Beit Sheni later expanded the decree to include its airspace as well. They were concerned about the graves imparting Tuma via roof Tuma to someone passing over it. Finally, in Usha, the rabbis added a stringency and required burning truma that came in contact with its dirt. However, truma that came in contact with the airspace of Eretz Amim, of the non-Jewish nations, would still remain with its status of being suspended. So the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from Chutz La'aretz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. Which reminds us that Yossi ben Yoezer and Yossi ben Yochanan decreed that glassware should be susceptible to tuma. Rav Yochanan said in the name of Rav Ish Lakish that the reason why they enacted this decree is that since the glassware comes from sand, a type of earth, it should have the same halacha as earthenware, hakliheres, which is susceptible to tuma. So once again, the fruit bowl was used to mix dough and drawn water together because someone put earth from Chutz La'aretz into the glass bowl made from sand, making it tameh. Dav Tezayin. So the symbol for Tezayin is toes. So here we go. At the queen's direction, her guests start to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. Toes, that reminds us we're on Dav Tezayin. At the queen's direction, her guests start to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes, which reminds us that even though glass is similar to metal in as much as it can be melted down and refashioned, it's different in the following way. Metalware, which is tummy, when broken down, becomes tahor. When it's refashioned into a new vessel, the rabbis decreed that it reverts to its old status of tuma. Glassware, which is tummy, when broken down, also becomes tahor. But when it's remade into a new vessel, it doesn't revert to its old tuma status. The reason is that since the tuma of glassware is only rabbinic, we don't impose the law of the restoration of an old tuma, which is also only rabbinic, which we're going to talk about in the third point. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, which reminds us the Rav Ashi is of the opinion that glassware has the halachas of tuma as earthenware, as a klicheris, and not metalware. The Gemara asks that if glassware has the same halachas of tuma as earthenware, as a klicheris, then why then does it contract tuma when it's touched by something tummy on its outer surface, whereas earthenware only becomes tummy when a tummy object goes inside of it? The Gemara answers that being that the transparency of the glass enables one to see the interior of the glass on the outside, it in effect makes the outside surface of the vessel equivalent to the inner cavity. Therefore, when something which is tummy touches the outer surface, it is as if it's within the inside of the vessel and the vessel becomes tummy as a result. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests are to stomp on all the tummy glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her that the fixed metalware would still become tummy. Which reminds us, the reason the rabbis enacted a decree that tummy metalware that became tahor through breakage should revert to its old tuma status when refashioned was as follows. Midaraisa, a metal vessel that became tummy through contact with a corpse, or being in the same enclosed space as a corpse, requires a week-long purification process, which includes sprinkling mechatas, the waters containing the ashes of the paraduma, on the third and seventh day, as well as immersion in the mikvah on the seventh day. So one way to expedite the purification process is to break the tummy vessel, which renders a tower, and then repair it. Piercing a hole in the vessel as well would be sufficient to consider it broken. The rabbis feared that as a result of this loophole, the institution of mechatas would fall into disuse. So they decreed that the old tumah status would return when the vessel was repaired. Queen Shaltzion tried to use this break and repair method at her son's chasna when the utensils were tame, but the rabbanon told her that the old tumah status returned. So once again, at the queen's direction, her guests started to stomp on all the tame glassware and metalware with their toes. But her use of the break and repair method was transparent as glass to the rabbis, and they told her the fixed metalware would still become tame. Daf Yud Zayin. So the Simur Daf Yud Zayin is a used car. So here we go. The used car salesman, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Zayin. The used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard, which reminds us, the rabbis enacted that any movable item that has the thickness of an ox goad, one tefach circumference, can serve as an ohel, transmit tumah, and render the person an avad tumah. Rav Akiva explains the reason for the prohibition was as follows. Midaraisa, a farmer carrying a goad over a grave becomes a rishon through direct contact with a goad. Since he might mistakenly believe that the cause of his tumah status was the goad serving as an ohel, instead of his direct contact with it, he might conclude that an ohel in general only makes someone a rishon and only requires a day-long tumah instead of the seven-day purification. The rabbis therefore decreed that any movable object that has a one tefach circumference, which touches a person while serving as an ohel, renders a person an avad tumah. So the used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tummy tumah scheme, which reminds us that another one of the 18 enactments was the decree regarding replanted truma. Midaraisa, when truma is replanted, the resultant growth has the status of a chulin and may be eaten by non-kohanim once the standard separations of trumas and maisers have been done. The rabbis were concerned that a kohen in possession of tamei truma would intend to replant it in the sowing season so the new growth would be deemed tahor and inadvertently come to eat the tamei truma in the meantime. They therefore enacted that the produce that results from replanted truma has the same status as the original truma. If the truma was tahor, the produce was tahor, and if the truma was tamei, then the produce was tamei. Therefore, there'd be no point for a kohen to replant his tamei truma. So the used car salesman started to sell ox goads out of his trunk by the graveyard after failing with his replanting tamei truma scheme and no one wanting to buy his bread, oil, or wine either, which reminds us, the bread, oil, wine, and the daughters of idolaters were prohibited as one of the 18 enactments. Prohibiting eating their bread and oil was a way to reduce socializing and prevent intermarriage. According to some, the prohibition of bread only applies to bread cooked in a private home, not commercial bread. In addition to prohibiting drinking their wine, the rabbis also forbid getting any hana, any benefit from it, as a concern of yain nesach, wine poured as a libation to idols. And while marrying non-Jewish women is prohibited from the Torah, the rabbis decree prohibited yichud with them, being in seclusion with them. Daf Yud Ches. So the symbol Yud Ches is a chuppah. So here we go. The chuppah, reminding us we're on Daf Yud Ches. The chuppah by the noisy water mill, where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls, which reminds us, there's machlokas regarding the reason why one may not put wheat in a water mill Erev Shabbos if it will continue working during Shabbos. Rabba says it's because it makes a lot of noise, which is a dishonor to Shabbos. Rabbi Yosef says it's due to the requirement to have one's utensils rest on Shabbos. It's an inyan of Shvisas Kalim. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls, which reminds us that there's malchokas and a brice regarding what is required to make someone liable for the malacha of lush, of mixing. Rebbe holds that if one person contributes the flour and another puts in the water or vice versa, the last one is liable since he is the one that caused the ingredients to bind together, even though no manual mixing was done. Rebbe Yossi, the son of Yehuda, holds that one is not liable until one actually kneads the dough manually. So the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground wheat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. Which reminds us, the Beis Hillel prohibits placing a pot in the oven before Shabbos, which will continue cooking during Shabbos as a precautionary measure so that one will not come to stir the coals on Shabbos of Shem Yechata. Therefore, a person may place a pot of raw food in the oven before Shabbos because the person wants it to cook through the night and there is no concern one will stir the coals. A person may place a pot of cooked food in the oven before Shabbos because, again, there is no concern he'll come to stir it. But a person may not place a pot that contains food which is partially cooked in the oven before Shabbos since there is a concern that he will stir the coals. However, if he adds a raw piece of meat into the mixture, then it can be placed in the oven before Shabbos since a person will not come to stir it. So once again, the chuppah by the noisy water mill where ground meat and water landed in kneading bowls was followed by a meal of partially cooked food with raw pieces of meat served in pots straight from the oven. All right, now it's time to conclude with a pop quiz of 10 questions. And actually, someone suggested to me today that I should throw in some questions from Brachos. So I'm going to throw in, from this point forward, three bonus questions from Maseches Brachos. So here we go. Number one, which daf do we learn the decree that carrying an ox goad in a graveyard makes one an avad tumah? That's on daf Yud Zayin. Good. Number two, where do we learn that the reason for the derabbanan, that tummy metalware that was broken and repaired reverts to its old tumah status, was out of concern for disuse of the mechatas? That's on daf Tez Zayin. Great. Number three, where do we learn that one can't put a pot of partially cooked food in the oven Erev Shabbos unless one throws a raw piece of meat in it as well? That's on daf Yud Ches. Great. Number four, where do we learn that laundering white clothes is harder than coloreds? That's on daf Yud Tes. Good. Number five, where do we learn the reason why, according to Rav Ashi, that glassware contracts tumah when touched on its outer surface is because of its transparency? That's on daf Tez Zayin. Great. Number six, where do we learn why one can't put wheat in a water mill if it will continue to work on Shabbos? That's on daf Yud Ches. Good. Number seven, where do we learn one should not embark on a boat less than 3 days before Shabbos? That's on daf Yud Tes. Good. Number eight, where do we have the question whether lush mixing requires manual mixing? That's on daf Yud Ches. Good. Number nine, where do we learn that one can't leave a pot in the oven Erev Shabbos if the food has not become roasted? That's on daf Yud Tes. Good. And number 10, where do we learn that the decree when truma is replanted, the produce has the same tumah status? That's on daf Yud Zayin. Good. And now it's time for three bonus questions from Brachas. Question number one, which daf do we learn that one who says Ashrei three times is guaranteed a place in Olam Haba? That's on daf Dalet. Good. Number two, where do we learn about the importance of having a makom kavua? That's on daf Vav. Great. And number three, where do we learn the Shalosh Matanos Tovos? There are three good gifts given to Klal Yisrael that are acquired through Yisurin. That's on daf Hey. Great. That concludes our pop quiz with bonus questions. This is Rabbi Avraham Gold from Zichru, wishing you a great day and great learning.